You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Hello, everybody. My name is Vivian Guerin. I'm an adjunct assistant professor in the School of Social Work and Social Policy in Trinity College, Dublin. And my job and task today is to chair this webinar. And I want to thank you all and welcome you to this INCJ webinar event, which, as you're all aware, is on the development of international standards for the use of artificial intelligence in criminal justice. And we hope that the conversation will be both lively and interesting. I certainly expect that it will, because apart from anything else, there is hardly a day that goes by without all of us hearing news and various media items on the significance of the reach and impact of artificial intelligence, or AI, in all our lives. And that's including in the various parts of the criminal justice system. And from the criminal justice system's point of view in relation to AI, the co-secretary to the Council of Europe's Committee on AI, Louise Riondel, recently was quoted as saying that regulation is the key to regaining trust in AI and ensuring the technology is used responsibly. And that's a part of the issue that is to the fore in all our minds today as we consider the regulation and the creation of standards regarding AI and its use within the criminal justice system. So how is the webinar going to work from a practical point of view? We're going to have a short introduction by Pia Puolakka, and that will be followed by a contribution from each of our two respondents, Matt Rowland and Stephen van der Steen. And then we're going to have a roundtable discussion with responses to your comments and your questions. The webinar, as Rob said, is being recorded, so if you could keep your microphones off while the main speakers are speaking, and please do use your own names in your title on your Zoom screen. And we want the audience, we want you to put points and ask questions to the roundtable. So there are a number of ways of doing that. In the first instance, you can use the chat function, which is a very appropriate way to do it, a very easy way to do it. And we'll keep track of those questions and comments as we go along. Later on, you'll also have an opportunity to use the raise hands function and to literally raise your hands on the screen so I can see it and bring people into the discussion. I would ask that people would try to keep their questions brief and to the point. And if anyone is making comments, please do keep those even more brief or briefer. Moving on then, I'm going to ask each of the speakers to briefly introduce themselves, if they could say their name, their role, and why they are interested in this topic. So I'll start then with our main speaker today, Pia Puolakka, who's a senior specialist team leader and forensic psychologist in the Prison and Probation Service of Finland. So maybe, Pia, you would introduce yourself briefly.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for inviting me to speak here. And good evening, everyone. My name is Pia Puolakka, and I've been working for the Finnish Prison and Probation Service since 2012. And I used to work as a project manager for the Smart Prison project, implementing first cell devices with digital services to Finnish prisons. And currently, I work as a team leader in the operative management unit, and I'm still responsible for various rehabilitative and digital services in prisons and probations. And I'm also leading a RISE AI project, developing artificial intelligence applications for offender management. And I'm a co-chair of the Europe-RISE ICT expert group. And I was also part of the Council of Europe's Council for Penological Cooperation's expert group, developing recommendations for the use of AI in corrections. And I believe that's why I'm here today. And as Vivian said, I'm a forensic psychologist and psychotherapist by education. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pia. And you've absolutely hit the nail on the head in one of your last points there, that the main thrust of your presentation today and what we'll be discussing is that project in which you were, which you have played a key role in the development of the Council of Europe standards regarding artificial intelligence in the prison and probation systems. Okay, thank you. And I'd like to now invite our first respondent to Pia's presentation, Matt Rowland, who's a former Chief Administrative Officer of the United States Court Service and now providing oversight and support to federal probation and pretrial services in the US, to introduce yourself, Matt.
Greetings from Washington, D.C. in sunny USA today. As Vivian mentioned, I had a 30-year career with the federal judiciary that finished up with me being the senior executive for the probation pretrial system, where we have been piloting with AI for a little bit now. Since retiring from the government, I have been working with in a consulting capacity, primarily on IT projects, including AI projects for corrections and court organizations, not just at the federal level, but the state and international level as well.
Okay, thank you, Matt. And finally, I want to ask our second respondent today, Stephen van der Steen, who is a specialist consultant in IT systems and solutions with Smart Corrections in France. Stephen, will you introduce yourself?
Yes. Thank you, Vivian. Thank you for inviting me for this webinar. My name is Stephen van der Steen. I live in France, but originally I'm from Belgium. I started my career in the Belgian Ministry of Justice, and I've been there for several roles, but main capacity as the CIO of the Belgian Prison Service. I have been very active in different international projects at that time, and in 2015, I started to work part-time as a researcher affiliated to Montfort University, doing research mainly on the concept of digital rehabilitation, and also we did some work together with Dr. Victoria Knight on ethical aspects of using technology in corrections. And also, I'm very active as a consultant, mainly for different jurisdictions across Europe, and also work for international organizations to support in digital transformation journeys for jurisdictions all across the globe. And I'm also a board member of the International Correction and Prisons Association, where I'm the board liaison for the Technology Solutions Network. Within that network and within the activities we do, of course, AI is a very important topic, and I'm happy to share some of my insights and knowledge about this today.
Excellent. Thank you, Stephen, and we look forward to that as well. So thanks, Stephen, thanks, Matt, and thanks, Pia, for introducing yourselves. And we'll move on to the presentation, the main presentation now. I should have pointed out as well that Pia now is going to speak for about 15 minutes with her presentation. And then both Matt and Stephen will each have between 5 and 10 minutes to respond before we open up the roundtable to questions and comments from the floor, so to speak. So just before Pia starts, I think it's fair to say that the Council of Europe, among many players and stakeholders, has been and is extremely concerned and energized about the whole topic of artificial intelligence. And as part of the Council of Europe's response in that field, set about, among other things, the development of standards for the use of AI in the criminal justice system, and particularly for the purpose of today's conversation within prison and probation systems. So I want to invite Pia now to share with us her presentation regarding her key role in the development and recent completion of those standards for the use of AI in prisons and probation. Pia, over to you.
Yes, thank you. And let's see how sharing screen succeeds. And I believe you now see my slides.
Yes, perfectly. Thank you.
Yes, so let's begin. And I try to keep it 15 minutes, as you said. So first of all, I want to point out that on the 17th of May, so just a couple of weeks ago, Council of Europe adopts the first international treaty on artificial intelligence. And these are the general recommendations for the use of AI. And it was the intention that only after this release, we are going to release the recommendations for the use of AI and related digital technologies for prison and probation service. So just to note that the general treaty is already released. And it's the first ever international legally binding treaty for the use of AI systems. And it takes a rather risk-based approach to the design, development, and use of AI systems, which requires carefully considering any potential negative consequences of using AI systems. And the outcome was done by the Committee on Artificial Intelligence. It brought together all the 46 Council of Europe member states, the European Union, and 11 non-member states, as well as representatives of the private sector, civil society, and academia, who participated as observers. And this treaty will be opened for signature on 5th of September. And the idea is that the recommendations for prison and probation services are then launched after this. And of course, these recommendations are aligned with the general convention. And then to the recommendations for prison and probation service, we had an expert group working 2022 to 2023. And the official name of the paper will be Ethical and Organizational Aspects of the Use of Artificial Intelligence and Related Digital Technologies by Prison and Probation Services. And I was honored to work with the best colleagues ever, Håkan Klarin from Swedish Prison and Probation Service and Fernando Miro Linares, Professor of Criminology and Criminal Law. And together we worked as an expert group for the Council of Europe's Council for Penological Cooperation. And regarding the recommendations that is intended for the Council of Europe member states, it recommends that governments of member states be guided in their legislation, criminal policy, and practice by these principles and rules, and ensure that this recommendation and its explanatory report are translated and disseminated as widely as possible, including judicial authorities, prosecution, police, prison and probation service, juvenile justice services, as well as among private companies, which often design and provide these AI systems, also in the framework of the criminal justice system. And the public authorities in charge of prison and probation services remain fully responsible for ensuring respect for these principles, and they should also ensure that the private companies which design these technologies follow the same principles as stated in the recommendations. We decided to use these two terms, artificial intelligence and related digital technologies, defining AI machine-based systems that for explicit or implicit objectives infers from the input it receives how to generate outputs such as predictions, content, recommendations, or decisions that may influence physical or virtual environments. And of course, different AI systems vary in their levels of autonomy and adaptiveness. And related digital technologies is rather a generic term that refers to all electronic devices, automatic systems, and technological resources that generate, process, or store information and data, which are being used by AI. Here I've just listed some examples that are also stated in the recommendations that how AI and related technologies can be used in corrections. So there are many possibilities, many applications, many benefits, but also, of course, risk factors related to these. Natural language processing, voice and speech recognition, image recognition, especially facial recognition, data analysis for large sets of data, predictive models for behavior prediction, optimization, recommender and expert systems, which are already used in some offender management systems, and then for rehabilitation and learning, for example, virtual reality and augmented reality systems are already used in the field of corrections, and probably many more in the future. But then to the principles, the three key principles here for these technologies to be used legitimately and proportionately, they have to contribute to the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders. They must not replace prison and probation staff, but rather assist them in their everyday work, help the criminal justice system, the execution of penal sanctions, measures, and the reduction of recidivism. And the paper itself is divided into six chapters. So altogether, there are 30 principles in this paper. And I'm not going to state them all, but just go through some of the most important ones. There are some basic principles, then principles regarding data protection and privacy, use of AI for safety, security, and good order, use for offender management, risk assessment, rehabilitation and reintegration, use for staff selection, management, training and development, and then last but not least, research, development, evaluation, and revision. So first to the basic principles. First of all, when using AI systems, there must be respect for human rights and dignity of all persons impacted by use of AI. And we must aim for least negative impact on human rights. And we should work in conformity with the international standards and defined by national law and liability for any unlawful harm caused by AI should be ensured. Biases are one risk factor that should be prevented to ensure equality and to prevent or resolve the creation or intensification of any discrimination or inequality between individuals or groups of individuals. Transparent to public scrutiny, monitored on a regular basis, and the logic behind and the outcomes of using AI should be sufficiently explainable. Then when a decision is based on the use of AI and affects human rights, human supervision and effective complaint procedures should be put in place. Data should be accurate and sufficiently representative of the general population and minority groups. Preserve and promote positive and beneficial human relations between staff and offenders. And all AI users should understand the basics regarding what this use implies. So there should be a level of enough AI literacy. For data protection and privacy, we must remember offenders continue to enjoy their fundamental rights and freedoms when AI systems are used, including also the right to respect for private life and the right to data protection. All key actors, whether they be private sector or public sector, that participate in designing and using the AI systems should comply with data protection law, be transparent, and also able to demonstrate how they comply with data protection principles and obligations. Data should be stored in a form that allows a personal identification for no longer than is necessary, and only the amount and type of personal data which are strictly necessary to fulfill a specific task should be collected, stored, or otherwise processed by AI systems. Use for the safety, security, and good order use of AI for maintaining safety, security, and good order should also allow for better risk and crisis management in prisons and probations. And prison and probation services should be consulted in order to identify the specific needs regarding the assistance of staff through AI. And the use of electronic monitoring, including biometric recognition technologies, should be proportionate to the purpose and only used when strictly necessary. Always carried out under regular human control and be human-centered also. For offender management, AI can be used to manage offenders' files and particular cases, and for example, to generate automatic alerts in cases of non-compliance. Just that we must remember that the final responsibility for decisions remains with the professionals, with the humans. When used for increasing the accuracy and objectivity of risk assessment, the challenges of algorithmic biases and quality and representativeness of data should be addressed. And when collecting information regarding, for example, risk factors, this kind of data should only be used for risk management, not for other purposes. And we must remember that in many ways, we can, of course, facilitate and help the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders, as well as their social contacts and medical treatment via AI systems. But we shouldn't forget about the importance of face-to-face contact or replace face-to-face contact with these. For staff selection management, we can use AI systems to optimize certain capacities and processes, but even more important, we could focus on supporting the staff's professional development. Also, AI can be used to assist to predict future organizational capacity resourcing, especially the problematic areas. And again, the person should have the right to be informed of the reasons for decisions based on AI and should also have the right to request the human review. So the responsibility remains for professionals, not for the AI system itself. The design and development as well as research should be sufficiently well-funded and supported and help develop further the proper and efficient use of AI. And AI systems should be evaluated at regular intervals by independent, competent evaluators. And procedures and resources should be in place to regularly monitor, identify, assess, prevent, and mitigate possible risks and adverse effects. And the last principle actually states that also this recommendation needs to be reviewed regularly and revised accordingly in order to continue working to protect human rights and fundamental freedoms of its users and the safety and security of our societies. AI is developing fast, so it's important that we review also the recommendations regularly. Then I listed here some Finnish examples. We are, of course, here also waiting for the recommendations to be released so we can check that our projects also align with the principles stated. But we are developing something for the offender management specifically. And we've also had a national AI program by Ministry of Finance that we are also using with our offenders. We are also participating in the so-called training AI work as prison labor in three prisons. Sounds exotic, but it's actually a very simple task. And we also provide some online courses for our offenders to increase AI literacy. Of course, also other skills and providing something meaningful and educational for offenders. The latest one is project regarding a chatbot for customer service on our public website. Should we worry about AI in prisons and probations? Well, now that we have very precise recommendations, I think it helps the member state governments to decide how to use AI in an ethical way. AI has certain benefits, but also risk factors. And I think when using AI, we must remember that it assists human decision making, and the intention of using AI must be ethical. So we are, of course, trying to contribute to the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders. That should be our main priority when using AI systems. And in the future, AI literacy is a necessity for all corrections staff and offenders. Some references here, and I think I've used my 15 or maybe even 17 minutes. But thank you.
Thank you very much, Pia. In fact, when you were under 17 minutes, you were pretty close to bang on target. So thank you very much for that. And particularly thank you for the clarity that you brought to your presentation on a very technical and very intricate subject, which was really, really impressive in your presentation. I sometimes feel we can all get a bit hypnotized by technology, and particularly something like AI, and really the clarity of your focus in terms of principles and everything else that you included in your presentation was really impressive in this fast moving field. So continuing with the theme of fast moving, I'm going to call on our first responder to Pia's introductory presentation, and Matt Rowland is our next contributor. And I want to invite Matt to give us a perspective from his own situation, maybe from the United States perspective on AI standards. And Matt, you're invited now to speak for 5 to 10 minutes responding to Pia. So over to you, Matt.
Great. Thank you. And great job, Pia. I think the bad news is here in the U.S., we're not as far along in our thinking on regulation and guidance on the use of AI. I think the good news is, if I were a betting man, I suspect that we're going to wind up in a place very similar to what Pia described, where it's a risk-based system, it's principle-based, and I think it will be flexible enough to deal as the technology emerges over time. But yet again, those guiding principles could keep everybody focused on the ethical use and mitigate the negative aspects of AI and exploit its positive ones. Again, here in the U.S., the regulation of AI has been very much a patchwork. And the reason for that is that the federal government is responsible for regulating interstate and international commerce and all things at the national level. And it's still right now very much in a fact-gathering and study mode in relation to AI. In the interim, what they're doing is they've adopted a strategy to leverage traditional laws and existing regulations to address any current harms that are caused by AI. For example, they're using traditional laws related to fraud and deceptive practices, privacy and civil rights and intellectual property protections, all in an AI context without new legislation necessarily, but again, using the framework that pre-existed. And in the federal government, there are three branches of the government. I want to touch briefly on where they are in relation to AI. The legislature, which is Congress, has several committees currently looking into AI issues with an eye towards a sort of global overarching legislation that will provide some uniformity throughout the country. You may have seen there was some relatively high profile congressional hearings with leaders from social media platforms specifically focused on those platforms being used by AI related applications for disinformation campaigns, particularly related to elections, but other issues as well. So that caught a lot of attention here in the U.S. In the executive branch, President Biden issued an executive order in October 2022. That essentially put the agencies and the federal government on notice to prepare for AI issues, both in terms of using AI at the agency level to become more effective and efficient, but also how AI may need or generate needs for changes in policy statements, legislation and regulation to still achieve agencies' mission. For example, right now, based on that executive order, the Securities Exchange Commission is looking into how AI may impact Wall Street and how they regulate stocks and bonds. the impact on the job market, particularly in associated with robotics, and the advances being made there, that's being studied by the Department of Labor. Transportation, the self-driving vehicles, again, that would be the purview of the Department of Transportation, who study extensively. And where we're concerned in terms of criminal justice use of AI, that's fallen to the Department of Justice. And they've been very active in forming work groups and interacting with industry leaders as well as their stakeholders about the appropriate role of AI and concerns people may have. Relatedly, they issued several white papers to familiarize people like myself who are in the criminal justice realm with AI generally and its potential as well as its risks. They've also funded pilots. For example, they have funded video analysis for our surveillance videos to help prevent and detect crime. Also, DNA analysis being facilitated by AI has been funded as well. And the Department of Justice has developed a strategic plan on its own use of artificial intelligence, and that will be a guiding document for the additional things that come along. The judiciary, the third part of the federal government, where I worked for a very long time, is already involved in the sense that it's resolving lawsuits related to AI. They're dealing with such issues as, can AI be granted a patent for something it creates? Can AI replicate or mimic individuals without that individual's consent? And in the criminal justice realm, the one that's probably been litigated the most is, what are defendants' due process rights in relation to AI algorithms that may influence whether they're released on bail pending trial, or what sentence they receive, or how their sentence is enforced? Also part of the judiciary is the federal probation and pretrial services system that, again, I was part of. We have been piloting its use in several regards. Vivian, we published an article in the Irish Probation Journal on using AI to digest incredible amounts, terabytes of data from documents to help identify patterns among mental health conditions exhibited by people pending sentence. And we were using that to try to anticipate what treatment interventions we would need moving forward and other things that would help mitigate those conditions. We also have an upcoming article in the Federal Probation Journal here in the U.S. evaluating the use of AI to go through recorded videos of officers' interactions with either people under supervision or in mock interviews following training on evidence-based practices to assess their retention of the material, their use of the material, because very often right now, a lot of our studies, we're not sure of the fidelity in relation to actually applying the practices. The other two things I just want to touch on real briefly is, in addition to federal government regulation, there's state and local governments that can regulate the use of AI in their jurisdictions as well. So far, that is primarily focused on specific use cases and transparency. So I'll give an example. The state of California has issued regulations and continues to look into how it can combat deep fakes on the biometric information without people's permission. So that's been done at the state level in California. My native New York City, for example, has laws related to AI transparency, where people have to be notified when they're interacting with an AI application, or if their information related to them personally is being used in relation to AI. And lastly, I wanted to touch on real quickly, the private sector here in the U.S. is developing best practices and a number of other things that the government is surely likely to leverage as well moving forward. So one firm that I'm familiar with is Accenture, which is very active here in the U.S., but I believe is actually based out of the European Union. They have, in addition to their normal legal review and ethical review of their projects, they have a special board that focuses on AI issues and tries to flag potential risks related to AI development in its projects and how to mitigate that risk. And these are separate and apart from people who are the project leaders who are developing the application itself or trying to solicit business to do so. And the idea there is that decision makers can be given independent information to make better decisions based on that. But I think on the whole, if I again had to suspect or had to bet, I think we're going to wind up in a very similar place in the U.S. in the not too far future to what Pia described in terms of that risk and principle-based approach to regulating AI here in the U.S.
Thank you very much, Matt. That's been a really interesting tour of the perspective and situation and approach to AI across a wide spectrum of areas of operations, but particularly in relation to the criminal justice system. So thank you very much for that. And I'll move straight on then to Stephen van der Steen and ask Stephen to give his perspective as an independent technology expert and advisor on digital strategies for corrections in the various places that you operate and work in, Stephen. So over to you.
Thank you, Vivian. Thank you, Pia, for the introduction. And also thank you, Matt, for sharing what's happening in the United States. And I heard some interesting use cases that I will remember. So a lot is going on. But let me first come back to the recommendations that Pia has explained. First of all, I would say I think it's true. It's really valuable. It's important to have regulations and recommendations on the use of AI. I strongly believe and agree with the statement that you put in the beginning, Vivian, about we need regulations and we need frameworks to gain trust in this very new technology. However, I'm kind of a little bit disappointed that we needed AI before starting making regulations. What I mean with that is that we are already using like 20, 30, 40, even more years technology without having real regulations. So probably it's about the fear about AI, that it's kind of emotionally loaded because we call it intelligence, and that's typically something that we attribute to human beings, that we all getting afraid and we are starting to regulate things. So it's a good thing. Again, I think it's important to do that, but we have skipped a couple of decades of regulations which we should have, because the risk of looking at AI regulations is that we think, okay, what we are doing, for example, implementing technology in corrections, is nothing related to AI, so those rules don't apply to what I'm doing. So there are a lot of principles like proportionality, legality, that are already relevant for the use of technology for decades. So again, I think it's very important to have regulations, but I think we need to take in account that everything we do, everywhere where we implement technology, those basic principles are necessary to support us with the design and how we implement technology. So that's the first remark I would put here. And this is also strongly related to my second point. Pia and myself, we've done some research, and it has been like 4 years ago, about the state of play on reflecting and using technology in corrections. And although there has been some changes based on what I hear and what I have seen during the last technology corrections conference in Istanbul a couple of weeks ago, but still the majority of the jurisdictions I work or I talk to are far away from thinking about AI. And I think it's not only regulations is not only potentially creating more trust, but is also creating fear. So I think there is additional work that we need to do is look at each individual use case and support not only what we should not do, but support and guide jurisdictions and people about best practices, how to do it correctly, based on the principles that we focus on. So that's a second very important thing and a necessity for really helping jurisdictions how to do it properly, how to make sure that when we use artificial intelligence, it's implemented for the good and we avoid negative side effects. Related to that second point, we also have to think, and that's my head as a consultant on digital strategies. We also have to think also what is in fact the problem we want to solve before thinking how we can use technology. Sometimes the things are the order between the two has changed. So people think, oh, new technology there, we should use it. I think that's a wrong reasoning. We have to look at the problems we have and then maybe technology can help us with that. So in this context, I think there are a couple of problems that are globally. The difficulty we have on rehabilitation, come back on that, and the high reoffending rates that we have. Of course, overcrowding in prisons. But another one, I think that it's rather recent, is the problem we have with the retention of staff and the recruitment of staff. I hear a lot of fear about AI and other technologies that they will take away jobs. And that's a reason not to use it. But we are in this very specific situation where all over the world, we are really struggling in keeping staff and recruiting staff in our prisons. So I think it would be very interesting to take that as a starting point and look, and AI and other technologies could help us with that, not by replacing the officer as a human being, but focusing on replacing tasks that could be done by machines, and focusing also on discovering what is the human element and the importance of human interventions in prisons. So I think that there's a huge opportunity there to take this piece of new technology and also the crisis, to bring them together and to reflect, taking account, of course, all the principles we just talked about, and trying to find a way to still keep the human at the lead of all what they do. So those were some of the reflections. There are a lot of use cases that already have mentioned by Matt, for example. I think that for each of that use case, it's a different situation. It's a different context. It needs to be treated differently. So it's important that besides, as I already mentioned, besides the generic regulations and recommendations, that there is really more deep research and also guidance on those different use cases, how to use technology and how to use artificial intelligence in the prison setting.
And thank you, Matt, and some very important points raised there. Some of the kind of chicken and egg questions, I guess, in terms of what needs to come first vis-a-vis principles and how we operate our systems. So absolutely, really, really important points to add to what Pia and Matt have said. So we have about an hour, or not an hour, half an hour left, roughly. We don't have to go on that long, but we have up to a half an hour for the remaining time in the webinar, and we have some questions in already. One question that was asked earlier, which is a kind of a general one, is, will the slides that Pia showed in her presentation be made available? So just to remind people that the webinar is being recorded and will be made available on the INCJ website, and it would be anticipated that, subject to Pia's approval, that her slides would be made available on the website as well as part of the presentation. I see Pia is nodding her head there, so I'm placing that.
Definitely.
Okay, yep. Thank you very much for that, Pia. We have a very specific question then directed towards Pia in the chat, from Adil Ali, who's in Fordham University, and they ask, I think AI brings opportunities, but at the same time, it could become a liability if it is not monitored. And did you come across any such challenge while teaching AI education to inmates, or while using AI to manage prisons, or while designing offender rehabilitation programs? And I'm guessing, Pia, that this question veers as much, if not more, into your day-to-day experience within the Finnish prison and probation system, and the evolution and development and implementation there of the smart prisons, for example, and some of the projects that you described. So would you like to respond to that question from Adil?
Yes. Thank you for the question. And I think regarding AI, we are still in the very beginning. So, for example, the RISE AI feature for the offender management system is still in the design phase, but it has taken quite a lot of time with experts to actually define a recommender system that might mix the kind of process that the human experts are doing when they analyze offenders' risks and needs and try to decide what kind of services would be good for them and to what prison unit, particular unit, the particular offender should be placed. So we are still in the beginning. We are in the experimenting phase. And this is the reality with many jurisdictions, as Stephen explained. But we are interested to see even the preliminary results when we finally get them. In general, I think prisoners have taken all this digitalization process in Finland very well. So they are very pleased. And I think also this studying AI and training AI as prison work has been interesting. Something different to prisoners compared to the so-called traditional prison life and prison work and what can be done in prison or what cannot be done in prison. Of course, we collect a lot of feedback from prisoners and also staff. And for the moment, we've collected most of the feedback regarding the so-called smart prison system we provided. So that is not yet AI. Well, maybe a little bit somewhere there, but more like providing digital services for prisoners directly from the cell. So this, of course, gives prisoners more opportunities to use services also from outside prison and contact their relatives and contact their lawyers and study online, etc. So these are very important basic rights for prisoners that we can provide via using digital technologies, which is very important. Then we have some, I forgot to mention, we use also virtual reality in some prisons for rehabilitation. And we are also working in collaboration with the prisoner healthcare unit in providing therapy that combines this virtual reality besides traditional therapy. So far, it's been positive, but of course, we must be careful when going further. And that's why we need the recommendations too. The ones by Council of Europe.
Okay, thank you for that response, Pia. Maybe I can lead from that final point that you made regarding the recommendation of the Council of Europe and the standards that will set for the use of AI in prisons and probation. And I have a question then, you know, whether it's in relation to the Council of Europe or other bodies that set standards in this area, how real are the standards, and specifically, how can AI standards or standards in relation to the use of AI be enforced? And I'm conscious of a point made by Matt, for example, that areas of the private sector in the United States are, you know, taking very proactive steps to develop best practice in the use of AI, and equally by a point that Stephen made regarding, you know, that different jurisdictions, whether in Europe or across the world, are at different stages of development. In some, there may be an element of fear about, you know, what's being imposed or what's expected. And I'm just wondering, going back to that question, when you're dealing with all of that, the standards being set by government bodies within the private sector, and then different jurisdictions that might be impacted being at different stages of development, how real can the standards be? How can they be enforced? And I might start, Pia, with Matt and Stephen on that before I come back to you, because I've been putting you under a bit of pressure over the last few minutes. So, Matt, do you want to respond to that first of all, and then Stephen, and then we'll come back to Pia?
Sure. And I think, again, if you view AI as a tool, it's not something in and of itself. It's not on like a motor vehicle where probation officers use or other things that they may use. That it's usually the intent and the impact that it has, that it still makes it still allows it to fall in line with traditional approaches to liability, whether that be lawsuits and civil liability or criminal prosecution and criminal responsibility. So I do think there's an issue of magnitude that comes into when you're talking about AI, but I think traditional principles of accountability and addressing harms still very much kick in. And these regulations, depending on the agency who issues them, here in the U.S., for example, if it's a congressional statute, there's usually civil liability, criminal liability that goes with violating that. Same thing with agencies. Security Exchange Commission, for example, can prevent a company from issuing bonds and can actually fine them if they violate their AI regulations. So I think, for me anyway, I keep going back to, while it's an incredibly powerful tool and it's a new tool and an evolving tool, that the mechanisms we use to regulate it shouldn't be too different than what we've done historically.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Stephen?
Yes, I agree with Matt. However, I think what's unique with AI is that the responsibility pushes much more, is much more pushed towards the business people, if I can say it like that. Whether, for example, previous regulations like the GDPR were more something like for the security people, the IT people, the security officer. Now, because of the vast impact that AI could have and the risk it has on all responsibilities, I think it's more responsibility of business people and leaders. And I think that also explains a little bit the attention that goes to recommendations at all levels of society and government. So I think the enforcement of those regulations will be done thanks to that. It will be easier thanks to that. Of course, you have the legal consequences. But still, I think it's also the responsibility of all the jurisdictions to take this in account and to manage those principles in at the level of their IT governance, of their strategical level, and not push this back down to the IT departments and let them figure it out. So that, I think it's often happened, and it often happens in the past, and I think it should be now, hopefully, a momentum for taking responsibility at all parts, levels of the organization.
Thank you, Stephen. Pia, would you like to come in on that about the enforcement of the standards? In this case, we're talking about the Council of Europe standards, but the same principle could apply in the United States or in other parts of the world that might develop similar standards.
Yes, that's a very challenging question, how to actually implement and enforce these recommendations, because the field of AI is still very, how would I say, only experts in the field can deeply understand all the aspects of it. And it's been a lot of work, at least here in Finland, to explain, even with the first stage of digitalization, that why we should do it and what are the benefits and how we can actually already tackle the risks technically and also regarding how staff learns to include digitalization and AI into their work. And I think there's also a lot of controversies in our field that, on the other hand, we are struggling with serious problems, like Stephen mentioned, overcrowding and staff turnover. So we are in the situation that we would need and we would definitely benefit from taking more digital tools into our practices. But on the other hand, the staff and also sometimes the administrative level is concentrated on the risks and fears surrounding digitalization and AI, which is understandable because corrections and prison and probation service are a high-risk environment and field in many ways. So there's going to be a lot of work to do in the future. But I think also the pressure of the society will affect in the long run. So it's always the situation that the society proceeds faster with new innovations and AI, and prisons are always a little bit lacking behind in the development, which is understandable because we are high risk and very special field. But what I'm seeing is that things proceed very fast in the normal society, and we should keep up with the pace. We should be able to modernize in the same way as the rest of the society if we want to fulfill our target, which is to reintegrate and rehabilitate offenders. Otherwise, we are not able to do it if we lag behind the development all the time. So this is what I try to explain here in Finland when I'm starting new projects, that we definitely need these kind of projects. Okay. Did Vivian freeze?
I'm just going to follow up then and bring in
Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. I thought I was lost for a minute. If I can follow up on that last point that you made, one of the ones towards the end of your last comment about the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders, we have a couple of questions in. One from Vyacheslav Nestorenko, and another one from Sherry Townsend. Vyacheslav's is, what type of implementation of AI is more appropriate and what should be done first? Finding a field, creation of a program, and then correct legislation according to this program, or is it some other approach should be taken? And Sherry says, if the problem we are trying to solve is how do we create better outcomes from treatment and rehabilitation programs, do we have research where specific digital strategies have accomplished this? And I would just add in particularly AI. So if we can focus, among our panelists on the issue of that point you made, Pia, about rehabilitation and reintegration, what's the best approach? Well, first of all, can AI be used appropriately there? And if so, what's the best approach, do you think, regarding the use of AI in rehabilitation and reintegration work? And then I'll go on to Matt and Stephen.
Okay. Yeah. So I think in Finland, maybe it was just accidentally, but we started with providing the online courses on AI for both offenders. And we also recommended the same program to all our staff. And that was an online course on the basics of AI made by Helsinki University. So we started to collaborate in this way to make the AI more understandable, to increase the AI literacy. And I think it was a good starting point. So I would say that start with small things that are easy to approach, that everyone can join somehow. Then, of course, as Stephen also explained, the legislation has come a little bit, or not actually even a little bit, but it's years behind. But that is how it sometimes happens with other legislations too, that we understand the need for regulation only after already doing some experiments, already after we have gathered some experiences, also the negative experiences. And so, and I think also the training AI as prison labor was a good idea, because the prisoners also got the experience, and also the staff, that, hey, this is something that is actually easy to do. It is not something exotic. This is the type of work among others, and it's something new. It's something interesting. It doesn't require a lot of resources. It doesn't take a lot of time to adopt it. So this kind of small scale, easy to use projects are the ones I think we should start with.
Okay, thank you very much, Pia. Matt, do you have any comments in relation to the specific use of AI in rehabilitation and reintegration? I think we always think of some of the other more inclined to think of the more basic tasks that AI can undertake, whether it's in a criminal justice system or otherwise. But is there an added value, particularly in relation to rehabilitation and reintegration, that AI can bring to the table?
Very much so. And I agree with Pia that I think baby steps and incremental development is probably the smart approach. But in terms of the need, and I can speak to here in the U.S., most crimes in the U.S. go unsolved. And the people who are eventually prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced to imprisonment, most of those people will be rearrested within 3 years of their release. So our outcomes, we have a dramatic need for change, and the AI can offer that. But I agree with Stephen and his point that there's a lot of people staying on the sidelines for various reasons. And Pia mentioned them, that, you know, sometimes it's funding, sometimes it's just the culture. But I also think people are waiting to see the dust clear and see where this is all going to go. And I think there's a huge cost to that. One, in terms that it will perpetuate the less than optimal outcomes that we have. But in response to the question, are there best practices? My experience is there aren't. And the reason for that is that we're not experimenting enough with it, and that there should be more agencies and more professionals in the criminal justice realm practicing in those small steps, those incremental steps. And the advantage of that is it will not only hopefully improve outcomes, but it will develop the best practices and will also allow criminal justice people, rather than reacting to regulation and legislation, it will help them inform what legislation and what regulations we need to improve the outcomes. So I would really encourage everyone out there, to the degree that obviously it's a positive sign they're participating in this call, to get more familiar with AI. But I think the question is, are there existing best practices? My answer is, other than globally best practices for IT adoption, specifically to AI, there haven't been any that I found useful. But I think we need to develop them, and we need to help shape the legislation and the regulation as it progresses over time.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Stephen, do you want to add anything to the debate about rehabilitation, reintegration?
Yes, I agree with Matt entirely that we need to do more experimenting. Because if I respond to the question from Jerry Townsend, there is unfortunately not much evidence, I think, on really use of AI in the context of of rehabilitation. I am not aware of any evidence yet on broadly using technology. There is some. And then I'm talking by direct evidence, but indirectly, we have to realize that technology often is used, also AI, to do the same things, but do them better. What I mean with that, if we know, and there's a lot of evidence that education is very important, and if we see in different sectors that use of technologies, including AI, can improve the delivery of education, I think it's already very interesting to assume that it also could improve the outcomes and corrections. We know that in a lot of countries, we have a lot of foreign nationals who don't speak the language. So if we can use AI to help us translate the conversations, real-time conversations, to help us translate information that they bring with them, I think it's logically that it will create better outcomes, or at least make us work more efficient. So there is a lot of use cases that just can be already based on I think very realistic assumptions, although there is no evidence yet that outcome will be there.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. I'm just keeping an eye on the time. We have a limited amount of time left. We have three questions. So what I'm going to propose to do, maybe abusing my position as chair, I'll summarize the three questions. I'll invite the panel to opt for whichever answer to each question, if you like, because I want to give at the end each of our speakers, presenters, an opportunity to say some few words before we wrap up. So if people are happy with that, questions, and they're about the issue of unintended consequences. As Jerry put it, for example, the impact on probation officer practice in decision-making, in assessment, the delegation and deferral to technological assessment, reduced use of discretion, and so on. So possible unintended consequences of the use of AI, I suppose, where the AI comes face to face are in conflict with the human element. That's one question. Is from Steve Pitts, and it's about that AI might help or hinder the interaction of, for example, the prison and probation systems with other parts of the criminal justice system, such as the police and the courts and so on. And are there, you know, pros and cons about that? And the third question is, given that some staff are probably fearful about the development of AI and its impact on their work, what's the best way, or what are some approaches that we could take to bringing staff more on board in the development and rollout of AI in prisons and probation? So there's the unintended consequences, interagency aspects of AI, and then bringing staff on board. So if I could be very dictatorial and say, could each of you take one of those, if anybody wants to jump in and respond, one each?
Maybe I will start on the unintended consequence.
Yeah, yeah, good.
I think that's a risk. One reason to have recommendations and best practices is to reduce the risk of unintended consequences based on what we know. But there is, of course, a huge amount of things we don't know. So I think part of the thing that Matt was saying, we have to experiment, although in some contexts we have to be very careful to experiment. We cannot experiment with everything, of course. But I think what is also important that we have to take other principles and practices like good governance and good design, implementing all stakeholders, do good risk assessments and look at the impact of technology from a holistic perspective to try to reduce those unintended consequences. So it's a huge task, and I would say that the challenge of using technology is often not the technology, but it's the change and the transformation aspect that it brings into your organization. And there often are lying the majority of the unintended consequences. So it's very important to look at this carefully. And like I already mentioned, all those kind of projects should be organizational and business-driven projects and not only seen as technology. Technology is just a little part of the whole project that you are doing. So yes, other unintended consequences, the risk for that, but there are also like a lot of ways in trying to avoid those ones there.
I can tackle.
Thank you, Steve. Pia, can I ask you that?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matt. Yeah. Wanted to say something. Yeah.
No, I was just going to offer to tackle the idea of how do you get staff familiar and buy in.
Yes. Okay. Please do.
Yeah. And I think for me, it goes to where you are going to pilot and experiment. You include people on the front end. You just don't impose it on them. If they're involved in the front end, they may be able to influence it more. And if you focus on the grunt work or the tasks that people least like to do and see if AI can eliminate that so they can be more focused on the professional aspects of their work rather than the paperwork and the mundane, that may be another tool that may help people get one behind AI and more invested in it. Like, for example, I know, the location monitoring is a big challenge because you have to have people available 24/7 to respond to alerts and distinguish substantive alerts from minor ones. You know, if AI can help with that, and so the officers can make better decisions. But I think and this goes back to Pia's point and the regulations generally, the principle has to be at the end of the day, a human's making the key decision. And the answer can never be of an officer, the computer told me to do it. That's never an acceptable answer, it never should be, never, hopefully never will be. But I think all this experimentation early on may help us resolve all those things. And if people are included in the discussion, we may come up with better results in the end.
Very good point, Matt. Thank you for that. Pia, would you like to respond to the interagency question, how AI can help with that aspect of the work?
That's a good question, because at least in Finland and due to the GDPR and everything, the government departments, different communities, and on the other hand, prison and probation service must keep their information to themselves. So we cannot share information. In some cases, we cannot share it at all. But on the other hand, yes, we can collaborate in many other ways. And maybe in the future, when things proceed, we find more solutions to these. I think regarding rehabilitation, the continuum between different officials, departments, and communities involved in the process of rehabilitating and reintegrating the offender, making this continuum possible, and also facilitating it with digitalization is very important. So the possibility to use different services already from inside closed prison, for example, and using modern technology to, for example, find suitable services for yourself, which is the idea behind the Finland's national AI program, to help people find suitable services regarding their specific needs, which is also the idea behind the AI system that we are developing for our own offender management system, but inside prison service. So yes, there are challenges, but also possibilities, yeah.
Absolutely. And it comes across clearly, Pia, from what you're saying, that a big part of the
the challenge or the task is about not overcomplicating things. Some of the very positive benefits can be quite simply or readily simply implemented. Okay, I want to move towards a conclusion or a closing phase of the webinar and to give our three presenters the opportunity for a very brief final point, if there's anything that they want to add by way of summing up as we come to a close of the webinar. So I want to give Pia the last word as our first and primary presenter. So maybe I'll go back again, as we've just done, to Stephen, first of all, and then to Matt, and then finish up with Pia's concluding thoughts. Stephen.
Thank you, Vivian. Yes, I think it was a very interesting conversation. I think it's important message that AI is a type of technology, and one of the basic principles, important principles that we learned from also Pia's explanation is that we want to keep the human in the loop, in the lead. And in order to do so, we have to take the lead as an organization also, set the scene, set the boundaries, not only relying on external recommendation, but internally in the organization, set the boundaries. And remember that technology is made by human beings and can also be changed by humans. And so just not think of the technology as some things that overcomes us, but take the lead in designing and shaping how you implement it in your organization.
Thank you, Stephen. Very well put. Matt?
You know, when I tell people that I'm working on projects related to AI, I joke with them that I am amazed by the great things that AI is going to be able to help us to do before it kills us. And that is somewhat facetious, but it doesn't have to be that way. I think, again, in criminal justice, our outcomes are less than optimal. This may be the very tool we need to really fundamentally change things and reach goals that our predecessors could only have dreamed of. But if we don't do it wisely and thoughtfully and collaboratively, like this call is helping do, we do have that risk that it could have the unintended consequences and wind up hurting more than it's helping.
Very wise words as always, Matt. Thank you for that. Pia, over to you for the final word.
Yeah, I agree with Matt and Stephen. And we must remember that AI is a tool. So it does exactly what we tell it to do, how we develop it, how we design it, because the human is there always behind. So it's up to us to use it in an ethical way and remember it all the time in the process that why we are using AI and how we are using it, and also monitor and control it. It's our task to take responsibility of AI. In Finland, we use this comparison sometimes to AI that you can think about a knife. Knife is also a tool. So you can either save somebody's life as a surgeon by using a knife, or you can kill someone by using a knife. So it's up to us to decide how we use these tools.
A very good point on which to finish this afternoon, Pia. So thank you very much for that. And I do want to say a huge thank you on behalf of all of us to Pia Puolakka, Matt Rowland, and Stephen van der Steen, our three presenters, for the webinar today. It's been a really fantastic discussion, fantastic presentations. So thank you all for that. I want to thank everybody who's been in attendance today, watching and listening. Just to remind everybody that this event will also be available as a podcast and on YouTube. So do encourage your colleagues to listen in and join the conversation with INCJ, the International Criminal Justice Network. I would also remind everybody that all of our material is available on the International Network for Criminal Justice website, which is criminaljusticenetwork.net. And also media postings are available on other platforms, including X at INTCJ Network. And specifically, I want to mention two recent podcasts, one recently on the 29th of April, on digital rehabilitation in prisons, which was a collaboration on the launch of the UniCree report on digital rehabilitation in prisons. And also we touched today in the discussion on aspects of rehabilitation using technology in prisons. And there's also an INCJ podcast available on our website and other platforms on the psychology
of digital tools in correctional settings, which Pia Puolakka and Joe Clark were the lead presenters on as well. So thank you all very much for your attention, for your input. And I very much want to echo the words from Matt, who said that a lot of people are staying on the sideline. I was very conscious, Pia, that when the Council of Europe started to develop the standards on the use of AI in prisons and probation, there were some voices that said maybe we should wait a bit longer because AI is at such an relatively early stage of development that we need to see more of what it does in practice before we develop the standards at this point. But as Matt said, we don't need to wait for the dust to settle. We do need to get involved, to get engaged, partly because of the huge cost for not doing that. So it really is important what we've been listening today regarding the development of standards in the Council of Europe and elsewhere. Thank you all once again, presenters and everybody else, for being in attendance. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.